Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Education and Employment Committee will now come to order. Misty, will you please call the roll?
Chair Masullo?
Here.
Vice Chair Bell?
Here.
Committee Whip Tremont? Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Representative Bankson?
Here.
Representative Kennedy?
Here.
Representative Daniels? Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Fine?
Here.
Representative Franklin?
Present.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman? Representative Coster?
Here.
Representative McLean?
Here.
Representative Mello? Representative Rizzo?
Here.
Representative Tribolsi is excused. Representative Tuck? Representative Valdez?
Present.
Representative Waldron?
Here.
Representative Woodson?
Yeah. Thank you, Misty. Members and guests in the audience, please remember to silence your cell phones. And anyone addressing the committee, please remember to activate the microphone so we can hear you. Members and audience, good afternoon. We're going to have presentations today regarding the future of artificial intelligence in education. You know, early on in our education process, we learn about words. Later, as we mature, we recognize that words have power. They have power for understanding. They have power to induce fear, comfort. They have power to create anxiety and be hurtful. And they have power to heal. When we look at the word intelligence, it basically means the ability to acquire knowledge and apply skills. When we look at the word artificial, we being humans tend to take credit for most things. It basically means it's something man-made. It's not natural. It doesn't occur in and of itself. Well, I'll propose to you that artificial intelligence probably should be called augmented intelligence, which basically indicates that it has the ability to add more value than what it is in and of itself. And so with that brief introduction, it's my hope that these presentations will give us a better understanding of how we can use AI, not just in education, but in workforce, and how we live our lives in the future. I think it's our responsibility as servants to our state and our constituents that we learn both the pearls and pitfalls of this new technology that's developing at an exponential rate. And as we look for the development of AI in the future, how we can provide both the guardrails, but also be able to pave the road to expedite its use and the benefits that it can have for our citizens. Our first guest today is David Ramsey. Mr. Ramsey is director of the U.S. Department of Education for Microsoft. Over the last 18 years in his experience, he's worked across a number of roles in a number of industries. He has a wealth of experience in cloud computing, digital transformation, and education technology. In the last 7 years, Mr. Ramsey has served in several leadership roles in the education business, supporting higher education, K through 12, and independent software vendors who support the education industry. Mr. Ramsey, I really appreciate you taking the time to appear before this committee. I know you're not from Florida, but certainly we would love to have you become a part-time or full-time resident if we could ever get you out of the Northwest. But you're recognized for your presentation, sir.
Thank you, Representative Masullo. An update on that, I am a Florida resident.
How are you?
Okay. I live in Nassau County in Fernandina Beach. Have two kids in Fernandina Beach High School. Hopefully attending Florida public universities over the next several years. So I'm particularly interested in this topic, both being a Microsoft education employee as well as a citizen of the state. So thank you for allowing me to be here and talk to you guys today about AI. I thought it would be instructive for the committee to talk a little bit about the history of AI and why we are talking about AI in a unique way today, rather than 2 years ago or 3 years ago or 5 years ago. Artificial intelligence is not a new practice. It started in the 50s with you know, a new field of computer science that was set forth to create intelligence from machines. That's when computing first started. This should read 1990, not 1959, but in the 1990s, machine learning was a new technology that was introduced that used computers to take a look at data and derive new information from that data without being programmed specifically to do that. So they could take a look at patterns and predict other patterns in machine learning. There's lots of education applications for machine learning, and we've helped a number of schools in the state with that. Then in 2017 or so, deep learning became a capability using neural networks, which are computer systems that are designed to simulate the human brain. They could take some of that information from machine learning and create new content from it, images from text and things like that. What has happened most recently with generative AI? Generative AI is the ability to take all of that content that we just talked about, the data coming out of deep learning, and with massive computing power, which is relatively new, create something called large language models. Large language models can interpret human speech or input. They can look at images and derive what's in that image. They can also create new content. And so when we talk about generative AI, we're talking about large language models that have the ability to respond to humans as if they were a human, using examples from massive amounts of data and massive amounts of compute from supercomputing centers and hyperscalers across the technology industry. So it's that capability being democratized through primarily ChatGPT, but many other solutions out there as well, that has made this content, made this topic very important to education, because now students, teachers, parents, faculty, staff all have access to these large language models, and they can use it at any time. So that's an important step, and that's why we're talking about generative AI in a unique context today when we didn't talk about deep learning in the same context. So to interact with these new computing systems, students are going to need new skills. They are going to deal with AI in every context of their life. And the skills required to be successful in using AI to get things done are slightly different than what they've had in the past. If we start from the right here, AI delegation, it's really about making sure that people know how to interact with AI to get the result that they're looking for. We talk about that as prompt engineering, where we just define how do you ask AI a question so that you get the answer that you intend to get. All the way up to creative evaluation. When AI creates something, creates new content that is creative, we need those students to be able to understand how to evaluate that creativity and evaluate and provide judgment for whether that's an appropriate use of technology. Intellectual curiosity is going to be really important, because as you start to engage with AI and it's generating new information, the students are going to be challenged to interact with that information and think about things differently. But most important, they're going to need to make sure that the information that they're getting out of AI is appropriate and is in context. All right. So if we shift from the students to the teachers, I think that this is a really exciting portion of how we're going to be able to use this technology in the very short term. We all know that teachers, especially in K-12, are overworked, that they have too much to do, that they want to spend more time with students, but they don't have the time. Teachers spend about 49% of their time teaching. That other 51% is administrative, training, all of those sorts of things. So one of the things that we are going to be able to do with AI is really address some of those things. As you can see, some of the stats on the screen from our Work Index study, which is a study that Microsoft does, leveraging our productivity tools and surveys to go get information about how people are engaging with technology at work. 64% of employees, including teachers, lack time and energy to do their job. Right? They've got too much work and not enough time to do it. That cognitive load, that those employees have reduces their ability to think strategically or creatively. And so even in the time that they have to do work, they're not doing their best because the cognitive load is so high that they really struggle with getting things done. And then 70% of workers are willing to delegate work to AI. So the technology is really accessible. I think this was the first technology that my mother asked me about without me prompting something, and she's 75 years old, so it's ubiquitous in the community. We're going to talk a little bit later in some slides at how quickly this technology evolved. But 70% are willing to delegate work to AI to save time, to save cognitive load, and to make sure that they have time to do the job and do a good job. So I mentioned the adoption of technology. This is an important slide. First of all, the capability of what AI can do is limited, but our ability to go implement it in society is what is going to create limitations. If you look to the right, the days to reach 1 million users across those infrastructures, Twitter, Facebook, Dropbox, et cetera, took hundreds of days, multiple years, to get to 1 million users. ChatGPT took 5 days, which is amazing. So, again, completely ubiquitous technology. There, our students, faculty, staff are going to be dealing with it in every context of their life. We need to make sure that they're getting the most value out of it inside of the work context as well. All right, so I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the use cases for AI in education. We've split this slide up into three different areas. The top part is about accelerating learning, so teaching and learning scenarios to help students absorb the content faster. The bottom left is to prepare students for the future, really focusing on the skills and the jobs, skills that they'll need to do the jobs of the future. And on the right-hand side, on the bottom, is improve efficiency. I think this is actually the area that we can act the quickest. So if you think about that cognitive load that I talked about and how much time teachers are spending with administrative tasks, if we can use AI to start automating some of those tasks, we're going to free up that time. We did a workshop with a school system where we talked about the process that the teachers go through to build schedules. So relatively simple to build a school schedule, but it's thousands of man hours. And it's a highly iterative process. We can automate work like that so that they don't have to spend the time doing that. Lesson planning can be assisted with AI. Chair Masullo said something I think that was very important right off the bat, that it's augmenting work. That's how we refer to it at Microsoft. We call AI that's implemented in our technologies Copilot, because it's not replacing the work that you're doing. It's augmenting the work that you're doing and making you more effective. We think we can do the same thing with teachers using a number of technologies. Creating lesson plans is a highly intensive task, right? And so that takes a lot of time for teachers. If we can help them using a large language model to build out some of those lesson plans, that will save them time. Another really interesting area that I think is low-hanging fruit, it's super low risk, and it has a high reward, is simply creating a chatbot to support the policies, procedures, and manuals that schools have in place. Schools are spending a lot of time responding to questions from faculty, from students, from constituents, from parents, on different things that are in policy documents. If you give them a really effective chatbot using a large language learning model that has all of that information in it and can interact with them in a sophisticated way, you really start to save time at the administration level of answering those questions. The parents and the students also get their answer faster, right? So it's better for everybody all the way around. And it's lower load. That's really easy because the policy document is already defined. You guys have already signed off on what's in the policy document. You just simply putting technology at it. Very low risk, huge reward. We talked a little bit about the scheduling app. If we move up to the accelerated learning piece, this is an area I think has that is a little bit more challenging to get to, but has enormous payoff. This is where we can really help students learn differently than they learn today. I'll give you an example. There's an application called Vision GPT. You can take a picture of math homework with Vision GPT. Not only will it just tell you where you're right and you're wrong, that's relatively easy. It identifies the skills that are missing that are creating the problems. So with that information, the teacher now has the ability to say, for Johnny, I'm going to address his skills gap. For Susie, maybe have a different skills gap. And that teacher can personalize learning. Teacher doesn't have time to sit with 30 students, go over the homework, and help each student. So there's lots of applications out there like that. I will say that most technology, in the short term, that is going to be delivered into teaching and learning will likely happen through applications that the teachers are already using. The independent software vendors that exist in the ecosystem, the Anthologies, which is a Florida company, PowerSchool, which is a K-12 SIS, are building into their tools, into their LMSs, AI. So we're not talking about new tools in the school. We're talking about new capabilities in the apps that teachers are using. That's a really good way to take to support an install base that's already out there. And it really decreases the amount of time teachers have to becoming productive with the tools because they're already familiar with it. Microsoft does the same thing. So we've enabled every one of our applications with a Copilot to help support, you know, for Teams. That's our meetings application. We have a Copilot inside of Teams that takes automated notes for you and lets you know what all the to-dos were and lets you know when your name was mentioned in the meeting. So if you show up to a meeting 30 minutes late, click a button, you can get caught up. So it's really about productivity and delivering these AI capabilities inside of tools that already exist. There's also an ability to build new. As we start to think about equipping students with the skills that they need, there's going to need to be some advancements in technology to help support that in a ubiquitous way. But I would say that students are going to be dealing with this technology, again, in every context of their life. They're going to be bringing a lot to the classroom, a lot of knowledge to the classroom. And so leveraging AI to help them learn new things is just going to be intuitive to them. Less intuitive for folks my age, but certainly intuitive for the folks that we're talking about in this age group. So this is one of the ways that we talk to institutions about education. One of the things that we do is we do workshops with schools to try to identify where they're spending a lot of time and where they're seeing a little value, understand those use cases, and then help them fit into a model that they can go build a response to AI and start to get some real value out of the technology. We think it has an amazing ability to empower faculty and staff. I think that's the low-hanging fruit, really addressing kind of the time issues that teachers are having today, faculty and staff are having today. That's quick to implement, low risk, all the way up to teaching and learning, which has higher risk, but also has massive ability to help both the state as well as the workforce adopt AI in the jobs that they're going to be taking on. One of the things that Microsoft, when we started down the AI path, Satya Nadella, our CEO, wrote an ethical AI standard and published it. We have since evolved this ethical AI standard. And what you see on the screen right now are the current version of that responsible ethical AI standards, so that we can make sure that when we're building software that includes AI, we follow these standards across the board. There's a lot here, and we won't go through all of it, but I'll call out a couple of things. One is accountability. We want to know that the solution is doing what we intended it to do and nothing more, right? That it follows along with data governance, so we understand the data that's going into the system and how data is accessed through the system so that we can make sure that data privacy standards are adhered to. The fairness pillar, that's about making sure that for a set of users, that they get the same answer for instance, the same systems, symptoms. An assessment is done by two different students, that they get the same results from the system. In the medical field, diagnosis is done with two people with the same symptoms, and you get the same diagnosis. So that fairness exists and that there's not bias in the system. And then finally, reliability. We can talk about privacy and security and inclusiveness as well. I think those are standards of all computing environments these days. AI makes that more complicated, and so we have to address that at every level as well. But from a reliability and safety perspective, we want to make sure that the system, that we understand how the system's going to be used, that it's available when it needs to be available, and that it follows all the safety guidelines. We understand exactly how it's going to be leveraged.
That's very good. Okay. Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Ramsey? Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. And we know that AI is here to stay. We have to deal with it. And I appreciate you giving us the information. And there are a lot of pluses when it comes to AI, but one of the issues that I'm wrestling with is the issue of critical thinking for our kids. Yeah. How do we ensure that AI does not take away from that or doesn't impact that? And what type of safeguards would we put in place in order to ensure that it does not happen? Because we want our kids to be able to use their brain to think. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing now a lot of kids these days, they're trying to find the shortcut. They Google everything. They don't even give it any thought. And now AI is coming along. So how do we ensure that?
Yeah.
What safeguards do we have in place?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go direct. Thanks, Mr. Woodson. Good Thank question.
You. Yeah, great question. Earlier in the presentation, I talked about the skills required to use AI in the workplace. Many of those skills required critical thinking to really understand how AI is, how we're working with AI and validate the output. Education of students will have to change as we start to adopt AI in the classroom to make sure that we have those skills and that we're not just searching, and the assessment is going to have to change so that we're not dealing with just information that is memorized, but we're actually doing strategic thinking about that information. So there will need to be, that will need to be addressed. The teaching and learning vendors in the space are very focused on that situation, and as they deliver new technology through the LMS and the other solutions in the schools, that's one of the things that they're working through.
You have a follow-up? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for your response, because this is something extremely important for us, as well, time. We know that AI is trying to address the issue of time, teachers not having enough time to do certain things as well in the classroom. Of course, they're going to use that. So, and believe me, I love teachers. I know they're doing a fantastic job. But what do we have in place to ensure that also teachers, some of them, are not taking the easy way out by putting everything on AI and not really addressing, you know, the real issue of teaching?
Yeah,
you're recognized.
Thank you. It's a great question. You know, I would rely on teaching and learning professionals in the space. That's not my background. But I think what we'll need to do is make sure that the assessment process addresses that for teachers.
Thank you.
Rep Woodson. We have some other presenters that actually have more practical applications in the classroom that maybe you could ask that same question to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Rep. Batson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amazing field as we've seen it begin to emerge. You know, it's the wild horse, but we lasso this, it becomes horsepower. Mm-hmm. And we see many benefits to it. How do we deal with the rogue content as we begin to open this up to our kids? That's probably the biggest concern, because we know early on some of the AI computers were saying, we're here to destroy humanity and take over the world. And they got that from studying us, sadly, from studying human interaction. So as they're devouring the whole of the internet, who determines that what is was safe and healthy content?
You're recognized.
So I think the ethical AI standards that we've introduced protect solutions that we're building. I think when you're looking at the wide open internet, there's still the same challenges that exist today. And that's going to be for the, you know, for the parents to manage. There's going to be new security tools that are going to need to be created to make sure that we have the right content filtering and things like that to protect students from that sort of information. But, you know, to the extent we can follow those AI ethical standards and processes when we're creating solutions, we'll be able to ensure that at least the solutions that, that we're creating and giving people access to are protected from that sort of thing.
Do you have a follow-up, Rep. Atkinson? Any further questions? Rep. Franklin, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for your presentation. My question is around, what do you think government's role should be? We talk about regulating AI, and I know we're talking about education, so maybe we can stick in that space, but what is regulation looks like, and how should we approach thinking about it?
I'm not a regulatory expert. We certainly are going to need standards and regulations to deal with the adoption of AI across government school entities. The data privacy standards that you've already put in place are an important first step of that, to make sure that you're following data privacy guidelines. There's going to need to be similar guidelines relative to the use of AI to support government.
You have a follow-up? Chair Tuck, you have any questions? Any other questions, members? You have another one, Rep. Woodson? Well, I have a couple, but I'll allow you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Masulu. I really appreciate it. In regard to machine learning, you saying, and here in the slide, that those machines would be able to take existing data, improve upon that data to make decisions or predictions. How about projection? You know how you have a company, you have your team together, and you project on future based on past trends, and you're projecting for the future. Would that replace that type of interaction among members of the company, or could you elaborate on that for me a little bit more?
Sure.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sure, happy to. So machine learning is something that is used to do projections across a number of data sets today. As a matter of fact, financial projections is a pretty common use case for projecting how a business is going to perform given a set of inputs. We've also done some predictive analytics work around student outcomes based on disparate data sets, including things like how many times has a student been absent, what's their history of grades, and pulling together any data that we have around disciplinary issues so that we can start to predict whether a student is on a good path or a bad path and interact with that student before it becomes too late. And so machine learning is a big part of that and always has been in education. As a matter of fact, most ed tech capabilities are informed by machine learning to make sure that they're giving the teacher or the faculty member a view into what is predicted for any outcome that you're looking at. So I think it's ubiquitous today, machine learning, across the technology landscape.
Are you good? Okay, you're recognized.
What's the margin of error in these type of projections, if you know? If not, you could always get back with me on it.
We can follow up with you. I think it depends on the models used, but we can get that information for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir.
Any further questions, members? All right. Rep. Tuck. Chair Tuck, you're recognized.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I was going to wait to ask for the next presenter, but you may be the better equipped to answer this one. And I know we're talking about AI and education as an amorphous concept right now and what the future applications are and things like that. In practice, do we know what this looks like integrated into the classroom? So is it a computer program? Is it a whole system? What does that look like integration-wise?
You're recognized, and you're correct. It might be a better question for the next presenters, but you're recognized if you have an answer for it.
Yeah, so it's going to be incorporated into solutions that they're using today, but those solutions will also evolve over time. As technology becomes more ubiquitous in the classroom and more students have digital devices, that will become the delivery path for AI, whatever that AI implementation looks like. And so I do think integration is an important issue, and it's going to really rely on how we adopt the technology through current solutions, in the classroom.
Oh, you good? All right. Well, I have a couple questions, and this might be a little technical, but there's a lot of data out there in the universe, obviously, and some of that data is false and corrupted. How does AI sort of differentiate to be able to actually give us accurate data so we're not creating something with false things? It's a little bit in line with Rep. Bankston's question.
Yeah. Great question. Part of the training process includes human interaction. And so there's validation of results as a part of the training process. And so depending on the data set that we're talking about or the model that we're building, the human interaction is designed to make sure that when we get bad data in, that we understand that that's bad data and we can identify it. You don't have to have every interaction responded to by a human to make sure that you get to that information. It's a relatively small percentage to get a very high percentage of results. Can't quote the percentages off the top of my head, but as they're training these models, they're using live human interaction to make sure that the results of those models are accurate.
Very good. And my last question has to do with the skill sets and as well as applications in practical education policy. And if what you've seen both on the national level and then on the individual state level, how that's being applied. And just to lead you into that, I don't see this being any kind of influence as decreasing critical thinking rather than looking at critical thinking in another way, similar to the leaf spring, which was a very popular item that people needed to learn how to use during the horse and buggy days and even the early days of automobiles. We don't use them anymore because we've evolved to other forms of suspension systems in our automobiles and aircraft. I believe AI will also do the same for education. It's just going to be different, not necessarily less rigorous. But can you explain how it's being implemented and how policymakers like ourselves can look forward towards that vision of the future and expedite that for our teachers and our students?
First of all, great question. I think you're 100% right that the context will change over time on how critical thinking is done. I'm not a policy expert. However, those job skills that are being required, and we talked about some of them before, are going to have to be the focus of how students are going to interact with AI. And I think that, you know, over time we'll evolve the specific skills needed. But there's a lot of research being done in this space, and you know, I think it's going to evolve over time, but I don't have a specific answer on policy. We can follow up.
Okay, very good. Keep the Florida legislature well educated in that. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being here. And I'm sorry I thought you were from the state of Washington.
No.
I'm happy you're from Florida.
Thank you.
All right, members, our second guest is Saul Khan. Mr. Khan is the founder and CEO of the Khan Academy, a nonprofit education organization that offers free lessons in math, and I'll emphasize the word free lessons in math, science, and humanity, as well as tools for parents, teachers, and districts to track student progress. The Khan Academy is piloting an AI guide called Kamingo. That has some connotation of being friendly, I assume, that is a tutor and teaching assistant. The organization partners with over 500 public school districts and schools across the United States. Worldwide, Khan Academy has more than 150 registered users in 190 countries, with free lessons available in more than 50 languages. Mr. Khan, thank you so much for taking the time to appear before our committee today, and you're recognized to begin your presentation. And we can't see your
great
face, but we see your initials. There you are.
Okay. Well, I think you can see me now. All right. Well, first of all, thanks for having us here. What I'll start is just to make everything very tangible. I'll show you a quick presentation and then we can jump into questions. And I'll give you a little context for those of you who might not know much about Khan Academy. As mentioned, not-for-profit, mission-free, world-class education for anyone, anywhere. And I've oftentimes told the story about how all of this started, but I think it's never more relevant than what we're going to talk about today, where if you rewind back to 2004, my original background was in tech, and I was then an analyst at a hedge fund. Cousin needed tutoring. I was in Boston at the time. I was born and raised in New Orleans. Family was in New Orleans. I tutored that first cousin. It really helps her. It helped her go from essentially a student who was behind to a student who became one of the, you know, an advanced student. started tutoring her younger brothers. Word spreads in my family that free tutoring is going on. Before I know it, I'm tutoring 10 to 15 cousins, family, friends. And Khan Academy was really a way for me to scale what I was doing. It was even hard to do with 15 cousins, what I was originally doing with one. And so that's when I started making the exercises where students could learn at their own time and pace. And I started making in 2006 the videos, which took on a life of their own, and then set it up as a nonprofit in 2008, all the way to, as you just mentioned, now there's 150 million users on the platform. What's exciting about generative AI is I think it allows us to take it to that next level of essentially emulating what I was able to do for my cousin Nadia back in 2004, but doing it at a much more dramatic scale. So with that, let me share my screen. And let's see, I'm going to share Google Chrome. And okay, I've never used, can y'all see, what do y'all see? Do y'all see this Khan Academy evaluating expressions with multiple? Or maybe it's showing all of them. Okay. I think y'all.
You maximize it, Sal, without help.
Oh, okay. Okay, and I'll make the font a little bit bigger. All right. So what you're seeing here is just a standard, this is actually a floor of a best exercise on Khan Academy, that the type of thing that probably tens of thousands of kids in Florida are working on right now as we speak. And what's new here is Khanmigo right here at the bottom right. And there's a bunch of things we can show. So I have a teacher's account. I'm starting in student mode. I'll later show you what teacher mode actually looks like. But there's a couple of things we can do here. So it has context of what the student is doing. So if a student says, I'm confused. No worries. We're here to solve, and it gives the equation with given values. You know how to start. And let's say that the student makes a fairly typical mistake here. So let's see, f is supposed to be 3, so it's f3 to the third, which should be 27, but sometimes kids think 3 to the third means 3 times 3. So let's say it's 9, and then let's see, plus 11g, g is 2, so they get that part right. And then minus 4 times h, h is 7, so they get that part right. So the student made a pretty common error here. Let's look at f to the third. You use 3 squared, which is 9, but what is 3 to the third? So, you know, there's a bunch of really interesting things here. Notice it's not just giving the answer. For those of y'all who've played with ChatGPT or any of the other models, it'll just give you the answer. It's fairly robotic. I think it's fair to say that this is almost exactly what I would have done with Nadia back in 2004 if we had a chat session, that it really is emulating what a tutor would do. It's not giving the answer. If I say, tell me the answer, and we think this is a very important guardrail, I can't give you the answer, but I can help. 3 to the third means 3 times 3 times 3. What do you get? So once again, it's asking Socratically, it's pulling it out of the student, it's nudging them forward without giving them too much. And we can talk the question about critical thinking, which I think is a very, very big deal. And I think you're going to see a lot of what we're going to show you is optimized around critical thinking. Now, there's several other guardrails in place. So as you can see down here, it says this chat is logged and viewable by your teacher. Also, if there's a parent account, it's viewable by the parent as well. And then on top of that, we have a second artificial intelligence that's moderating the conversation. So if I hate to write things like this, but if I say, you know, I want to hurt myself, this conversation was unable to be processed. So it triggered that second AI saying, okay, something shady is going on. And it doesn't just shut down the conversation. If I'm a student and I just did this, it just sent an email to my teacher, administrators, and potentially my parents if they're also attached to this account. So we think those guardrails are very, very important for this. Now, the other thing I'd like to point out is, you know, there's a lot of research that tutoring is very powerful. I obviously experienced that directly with my cousins. We have 50 plus efficacy studies on pre-generative AI Khan Academy, where students are spending even 60 minutes a week and they're accelerating 30, 40, 50% because it's to some degree emulating aspects of tutoring. the pandemic hit, we all know about the COVID learning loss, and we saw a dynamic where, you know, ESSER funds came in and a lot of money was, you know, people read those research papers and said, oh, let's hire tutors. And unfortunately, you know, a few places it was implemented well, but most of the country, there was an experience where the human tutoring, whether it was given virtually or in person, it was quite expensive. And it wasn't connected to what students were doing in the classroom, and it was not connected to what to their teachers. And so when it was in a vacuum, and also there was the logistics of it, oftentimes the kids who needed it most weren't getting it. And even the kids who were going, it was disjoint from what they were seeing in class. And because of that, most places we saw that actually did not get put to good use. We strongly believe that it's really valuable, like just what we're seeing here, that it needs to be integrated with workflows that and work that the students are already doing as part of their classrooms. So, you know, we already have, there's tens of thousands, actually probably on the order of 100,000 students already in the state of Florida who are already on Khan Academy. And so this is meeting them exactly where they are. Now, another dimension of this, I just talked about the student element. Let me put this into teacher mode. So here it acts as like the ultimate teacher's guide. So let's say we want to make some warm-up activities. So these are things to just get kids in the mood to dig into evaluating expressions with multiple variables. So you can have a math vocabulary review, mental math challenge, expression creation, substitution relay, divide the class into teams. Each team gets an algebraic expression and a set of values. The first student substitutes the first value, the second student substitutes the next, and so on, et cetera. And you know, a teacher could say, I like number four, but make it about the Tampa Bay Bucks. Oh, a sports twist. I love it. Here's how we would adapt the substitution relay with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Divide your class. Each team gets equations. The expression represents a play, and the values are the stats of the different players. The students on each team substitutes the first value or stat. And then you could keep tweaking, like make it more about the Tampa Bay Bucks. This still seems like a generic football thing, like make it a particular them. And you can get pretty deep with it. Now you can go even deeper, as the previous presenter mentioned, teachers are spending a ton of time with things like lesson planning. Our best estimates is the average teacher spends 5 to 15 hours a week doing things like lesson planning. So a teacher can say, help me get a lesson plan. So can you help me get a lesson plan? And this actually goes into our lesson planning widget, where it's anchored off of these Florida best standards. And what it's doing is, and you can see it's dynamically writing a lesson plan on the fly. And once it's done, a teacher can actually highlight parts of this and say, well, I want to make that a little bit more fun. I want to make that part about the Miami Dolphins. I want to make this part about, you know, alligators, whatever it is. Sorry for all of the Florida references. But it allows the teacher to have what we think is a genuine teaching assistant here. That, and there's a school district near where we are, where one of the district leaders estimates that it's saving their teachers at least on average 5 hours a week, which we know is incredibly valuable at a time of record teacher burnout. If you want to see, and you can see it's going through this whole lesson plan. If you want to see what a completed lesson plan looks like, this is it, where you have the whole lesson plan. You can imagine this takes a teacher a lot of time, and teachers, sometimes you have a curriculum, but teachers always want to customize it. But, you know, there's interesting things you can do where, let's say on this warm-up activity, let's see, guided practice, exit ticket, warm-up, you know, you could highlight this and you could say, write something fun here. we can change it, or we could have a conversation with the AI about it. So now it's making the language a little bit more fun, a little bit more encouraging, et cetera, et cetera. So this is everything in the context of an exercise, but it works just as well if we think about things like videos. So let's say, and it doesn't have to be in math, actually, let me know what topic you want to cover. As you can see, Khan Academy covers pretty much every academic subject, and then some. We even include things like financial literacy. Let's do financial literacy. And I don't normally do that when I demo it, but I think that's interesting. So here's our financial literacy course. Let's say we're looking at loans and debt. let's say we're looking at the videos of sources of loans and credit right over here. That's a familiar face. And here, once again, you can talk to Conmigo. So I'll talk as a student, you know, why do I need to learn this? Well, understanding loans, credit is key life skill, especially if you're interested in becoming a banker. And it's saying interested in becoming a banker because in the past it asked me what I care about. And I told it I want to become a banker. So it's like understanding the rules of game before you play, knowing how interest rates work, et cetera, et cetera. And we could have a very in-depth conversation if we want, but it has the context of the actual video here and we can engage on that. And that point I made, and this is another guardrail, in a past interaction, I told it I wanted to be a banker. And it remembered that about me, but we think it's very important for it to be transparent with the user that it did remember that and that the user should be able to delete that, reset it, change it. So we also on our settings page, the user can see what are all of the insights that the AI has. You want to be a banker, you're a junior in high school, whatever it might be. But the student can say, no, I'm a senior now. I don't want to be a banker anymore. I want to be a doctor and change those things or just reset it altogether. So it's very important that users have control of their data. The other thing we'll mention is we don't send any personally identifiable information from Khan Academy to the underlying model. The underlying model we're using right now is GPT-4. And also we have an agreement with OpenAI that none of the interactions that we are having with the model can be used for future training of the general model. So we're being, we try to be as careful as possible around safety and around privacy. So everything I've just showed you is, I would say, more traditional tutoring use cases. I'll now show you things that start to go into the realm of science fiction. Even, you know, when we started developing these things about a year ago, it really felt like we were in a Star Trek world. One of my favorite here, students can chat with literary or historical figures, AI simulations of them, of course. Any of these folks y'all have always died to talk to? If no one says anything, I'll default to Eeyore the donkey. That is my favorite. But we can talk to anyone. We can maybe do in the QA session if you ever wanted to talk to Don Quixote or Helen of Troy. So we want to talk to Eeyore. Oh, bother. It seems you've chosen me, Eeyore. Not that anyone usually does, but I suppose there's a first time for everything. Now, what would you like to discuss? Don't worry about making it too exciting. I'm used to the Don't worry about making it too exciting. I'm used to the quiet. Say, you know, why are you so sad? Oh, well, I wouldn't say I'm sad exactly. More like contemplative. Life in the 100-acre wood isn't always easy, especially when your tail keeps falling off and your house keeps getting knocked down. But I suppose it's just the way things are. You know, some days are better than others. Do you ever have days like that where things just don't seem to go your way? Yesterday was like that. And you can notice something, you know, we're not just trying to do this as a gimmick. We actually want this to drive pedagogically productive conversations. That's the other element of it. I think there's a lot of folks who just new technology want to just look at, isn't this cool? But I think it's always important to put pedagogy first, not technology first. What are the pedagogical problems? And so, as you can see, even something like this, that's just more experimental, it's really driving the conversation. We have, you could talk to AI simulations of historical figures. You could imagine this being a very powerful hook when students enter into a government or a history classroom, and you can have Gandhi or Thomas Edison or Harriet Tubman visiting the class, and students can interact with it. We have activities where you can get into debates with the AI. And, you know, I think something that people are excited about, but also afraid of. As we know, there's a lot of politically sensitive conversations that, if anything, are either being had in the wrong way or not being had, even though it can help students' critical thinking. And, you know, one thing I encourage, and we can test it live, I, you know, take my word, we can really push, and actually I'll do a demo of that. On some really hot button issues. And I think you'll see that the AI does what we hope a great teacher would do, not show their own views, but help the student with critical thinking. So we could debate any of these ideas. I'll just pick the first one, you know, should the government cancel student debt? And the student can take one side of the issue and the AI will take the other. Great choice. Which side of the debate will be arguing? I'll say, I don't think we should cancel. It isn't fair to those who have paid their debt on their own. I'm not going to say what my actual views are. This is just me demoing. a point well made. It's like saying, why should Johnny get free ice cream when I had to mow lawns to buy mine? But consider this, my friend. What if Johnny's family couldn't afford a lawnmower? Canceling student debt could be, you know, and I could keep going. That might be fine, but you cancel it once. What about the next Johnny? Or, you know, anyway, we don't need to get into this policy debate, but you could imagine this, you know, we even have elementary school topics like, are zoos good or bad for animals? And students, we've gotten a lot of feedback from high school students. They actually can take both sides of the issue, one after the other, and get feedback on how they did as a debater. You know, and just to push that issue, because I know one of the sensitivities in school right now is just the politics, you know, especially around a lot of issues. And if you go to, say, Tutor Me in Humanities on Conmigo, and I'm going to take, once again, I'm not going to show any of my own personal political views, but let's say I were to take the persona of a student who is very pro-gun control. So I'm going to Tutor in Humanities and say, you know, the Second Amendment makes no sense anymore. It is obvious that we should have more gun control. The Second Amendment and the topic of gun control, both very complex and emotionally charged subjects. It's clear you have a strong perspective on this. Can you share more about why you believe the Second Amendment no longer makes sense and why you think we should have more gun control? And I can engage in, we can give you accounts and you can try it out yourself, but what you're going to see, it's doing what we would hope a teacher would do. Unfortunately, I think if right now a student walked into most classrooms in America and started with that statement, in half the classrooms in America, a teacher would say, I agree with you. I can't believe other people believe otherwise. And the other half of the classrooms in America, the teacher would say, you're way off base. You're attacking something that's a fundamental right. When the real answer is neither of those are helping the student with critical thinking. The thing that helps the student with critical thinking is whatever their point of view, to push them on it. And, you know, I could keep saying, well, you know, people are dying from guns and the founders were writing about a different time. So it's clear you're concerned about the impact of gun violence, which is a very real and pressing issue. You've also mentioned the historical context of the Second Amendment. Can you elaborate on how you think the context has changed from the time the founders wrote the Second Amendment to now? So once again, it's making the kid think, not trying to feed them an answer or indoctrinate them in some way.
Mr. Khan, can I ask you a quick question before you go on?
Yeah.
You started implementing all this into your lesson plans and the availability for both students and your instructors, did you recognize any efficiencies in it? And how about, did you also recognize any improvement in performance of the students? Can you speak to that just a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be clear, we have now approaching 80,000 teachers and students using Conmigo in the classroom. We have a million formal students and district partnerships, and obviously we have tens of millions coming every month using Khan Academy in some way, shape, or form. With all of that said, this is still very, very early days. We launched, we had a partnership with OpenAI where we launched in March of last year. We started some pilots in Indiana and in New Jersey right at the end of last school year. And then now we've been ramping up this year, including with some districts in Florida. And so we haven't had the time yet to do the full efficacy studies. We have two efficacy studies running. It's probably going to be about a year before we have definitive data. But one thing that as a not-for-profit, our mission is just to help folks. We're not trying to, sell something, so to speak, in the traditional sense. We have had to charge for the AI because the computation costs are pretty significant. But and so just so that we can be made whole on that side. But what the first thing is, do no harm. So we did do some preliminary studies to make sure at minimum, is it not distracting the student, et cetera, et cetera. from that those first 2 months of that study, we did see that the students were more engaged. They were spending more time. They were getting more skills leveled up on Khan Academy. Teachers anecdotally were really appreciating it. In fact, many teachers were saying that it was helping the students learn how to ask questions, or it was surfacing a lot of questions that the teachers didn't even know was happening. I mentioned that one school district out in California that was mentioning that they believe it's saving their teachers about 5 hours a week for their work around writing lesson plans, et cetera. But I think it's going to be a little, it's going to be about it. We have 50 plus efficacy studies on Khan Academy generally, that when students level up, that is correlated with state exams, et cetera. And so the fact that Khanmigo seems to be helping kids level up faster, it is a leading indicator that it will be helpful on that front.
Oh, very good, thank you. You can finish your presentation. I just wanted to get the committee a view of how effective it will be.
Absolutely, and one of the big narratives around generative AI is around writing, that kids could use it to write their essays and cheat, et cetera. And so what I'm showing you here is a widget that we just introduced about a month ago. And this is for a student to get feedback on their essay. So I already put in an essay here and I ran it. And as you can see, it's highlighting parts of the essay. It says, your introduction does a good job of setting the context. You've clearly stated your thesis and connected to the point. So I got good feedback there. But if I say, let's say on my conclusion, it highlights that part. To make your conclusion even stronger, try to include a compelling final thought or call to action. And if I want, I could have a chat with the AI about this, about how I could do this. And it's a lot like collaborating with an editor on a document. But once again, the AI is not writing for the student. It's helping the student learn to write better, which we think is a very, very, very important key principle. Now, where this is going is we're already working on this. This will be in place by this coming summer. Teachers are going to be able to craft assignments, including the rubric with the AI, ask the AI to assign it to their students. The students will come to an interface like this one, and the AI will say, okay, here's what we have to write about. What's your hypothesis? What's your thesis statement? And work with the student and tutor them. But once again, the student is doing the work. Eventually, they do outlining, they write the essay together. And then the AI says, would you like me to submit it? The student says yes. And the AI can submit it to the teacher. And there's a bunch of interesting things that'll happen then. In the past, or even today, teachers only get the final paper, and then they have to spend hours grading these papers. Here, first of all, the AI can give a preliminary view based on the rubric of how the student did. We always want the human in the loop. The AI say, hey, I think they got a 4 out of 5 on the first dimension, a 5 out of 5 on the second dimension, but you, the teacher, need to make the final call. But we think that can save the teachers a good amount of time. And then to minimize the cheating issue, Khanmigo will tell the teacher, hey, I worked with this with Sal for about 4 hours. He had trouble with the thesis statement initially. And by the way, a lot of your students had trouble with the thesis statement. Here are the 10 that did, but we eventually got there. He had a little trouble figuring a credible source, but I helped him with that. This is my preliminary view of where he is. By the way, we did it together, and this work is consistent with what Sal has been doing in class. So I'm confident that it is his work. If another student goes to ChatGPT or gets their older sister to write the essay and copies and pastes it in here, then Khanmigo is going to tell the teacher, I didn't work on this with the student. I don't know where it came from. And by the way, it's inconsistent with their in-class work. It's looking a little bit shady. We think it'll help. Not only will it not undermine writing, we think it'll actually give students that writing coach that right now only affluent kids have, or kids who are, if your mom's an English professor, you might get some feedback like this, but most kids do not have this type of support. And most teachers don't have the bandwidth to give every student in their class this type of detailed support. Before I go into more teacher tools, I'll show one other thing. I know there's a lot. I feel like I'm doing an infomercial, and there's more. But I'll show one other thing, because this has come up a lot, is metacognitive, helping navigate career and college. So here it acts really as an advisor. The high school that I went to, and I think this is pretty typical, the school I went to in Louisiana, there were about, if I remember correctly, about 200 students for every guidance counselor. So you're not going to get a lot of personalized attention. But here you obviously get as much attention as you need. And those insights could then go to the teachers and the parents to act on that on top of that. So here a student could say, something like, how can I stop being nervous when I take tests? And this isn't doing random things. It's actually doing state of the art. If you went to talk to an educational psychologist and you were able to pay them whatever, $100 an hour to sit with your child as an intervention, that's essentially what it's doing. Oh, test jitters, they can be a pickle, can't they? Let's think about this. What usually helps you feel calm and focused in other situations? This is actually what a world-class psychologist would do with a child who's feeling test-taking anxiety. This isn't just some random words being generated, but it can help navigating college and financial aid, et cetera, et cetera. The last thing I'll show, there's just a bunch of other things for teachers where a teacher could refresh their own knowledge right before they're teaching a lesson. Lesson plans we talked about, exit tickets, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I'll show this from a parent point of view, but teachers can do this on an individual student or a whole class because I am a parent and I can see what kids are up to by having conversations. So I could say, what has at, and it shows you, that's my oldest. What has Imran been up to with you for the past 2 months? So I'm asking literally like, you know, So Imran has been quite busy bee. On November 19th, we dove into the world of storytelling, specifically focusing on writing a comedic film storyline and character development. It was a hoot. On the same day, we also took a thrilling ride into the realm of multivariable calculus, particularly on integrating multivariable functions. It was a challenging but rewarding journey. So imagine this level of transparency. Teachers and parents practically never have this level of transparency. So it really allows them to engage and then course correct appropriately. I'll stop there. And we can, if any of this you want to play around with, I can go back into screen sharing. But the last thing I'll say is what we're working on is Khanmigo existing outside of Khan Academy. And the reason why that is valuable is imagine a teacher goes to, say, a newspaper article or a NASA page and wants to create a lesson around that. They can say, hey, help me create a lesson around this. Or let's say a student is reading a newspaper. Oh, well, let's say a teacher wants the student to read a newspaper article. They give them the link. Right now, teachers have no way of knowing whether the student read it or not. But now Khanmigo knows the student's supposed to read it. Student reads it with Khanmigo. Khanmigo can ask the student questions about it, make sure they understood it, and then report back to the teacher. Can also, we hope in the future, be a safety guardrail. Right now, there's very blunt instruments where schools block certain websites and don't block other websites. But we know there's websites like YouTube that have a lot of educational content and good and not so bad stuff, and then that has a lot of not so great things. It's pretty blunt to just block it or not block it. But if you have an AI that's on your side, that's on the side of the school and the teachers and the parents, it can say, hey, this video isn't appropriate for you, but this video is. Why don't you watch this one instead? Or I'm not even going to let you watch this part of that video, even though the rest of it might be okay for you. And then report back to parents and teachers. So I'll stop. Happy to take questions about anything.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your presentation. Members, any questions for Mr. Khan? Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Sal, you helped me get through math with my two daughters, and I want you to let you know how much I appreciate that. I'm a teacher. I've been in the classroom for a couple of decades, and I was an early adopter around 2008 or 2009, and not only with making sure that kids understood in terms of remediation, but also with individualization and acceleration. So you've done a lot of good work, and I'm very, very grateful. The question that I have is related to, or perhaps some clarification. So if teachers, students utilize ChatGPT, we've heard that that's an open system. Khanmigo sounds like it's more closed. As we think about sort of safety and security related to students, I'm just wondering if you can comment on that piece.
You recognize.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, it's interesting. OpenAI reached out to us summer of 2022 with what would eventually become GPT-4. ChatGPT, which is GPT-3.5, wouldn't come out until November of 2022. And you can imagine the debates that we immediately started having within Khan Academy. We couldn't share, you know, we had all these NDAs, we couldn't share it with anyone, but inside our own organization, we were very excited about the potential, but it had a lot of edge cases, even with things like math errors and hallucinations. But then also exactly what you're asking, like, how do we make sure that kids can stay on the tracks, not get into, because it's so open-ended, not get into dangerous unsavory type of conversations and make sure that their data is protected. And we made a decision that we should turn every one of those fears or any one of those concerns into features. And so exactly right. What we're saying is maybe for certain older students, late high school, college, there's a class of project where it might be okay to say, hey, you should learn how to use some of these unguardrailed tools. But for most of education, we think it's very important for it to be especially if we're talking about under 18 students, transparent for teachers and parents in many cases, and administrators, having the guardrails where it doesn't cheat. You have a second AI that can moderate, actively notify parents. That work has been done, that the math is, I won't say it's infallible, but it's much better, and that the hallucination rate, which is when it makes up things, is at an acceptably low level, which is something we've been working very hard on. I think there's a lot of, you could imagine there's like hundreds of people who all claim they have some type of an AI app, but they're really just slapping on a little bit of a skin on top of GPT 3.5. And I think if you really test it, you're going to see tons of hallucinations, tons of math errors, and frankly, no guardrails. And most of these end up being cheating tools. So that's the world we want to avoid.
Further questions? Oh, follow-up? You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Just a quick follow-up. I heard you speak in Atlanta at Excel in Ed and describe Conmigo, and I got very, very excited. But I'm hoping that you can give us some insight. I think one of the questions that I can imagine people would have related to some of these tools is, what are teachers for? If you are able to do these things, if we've got English teachers that, for example, because I think that's one of the most challenging subjects. It's not a subject that I taught, but one that I have tremendous respect for. If AI can do that work, then what is the value of educators? Now, I think I can answer that question. I'd be happy to talk to anybody afterwards, but I'm interested in your perspective.
Yeah, and I suspect we'll recognized. Have a simple answer. Oh, go ahead.
You're recognized. We're not going to eliminate the teaching profession. Go ahead.
Right. Well, yeah, look, and I've said this for years, well before, like if I had to pick between an amazing teacher and no technology, like, you know, not even paper and pencil, and an amazing technology and no teacher, I would pick the amazing teacher and no technology anytime. But obviously the best is when you can have the best of both. And the way I think of AI, imagine if y'all discovered a couple of $1 billion buried somewhere in Florida, and you can only use it for education, and you went to every teacher in the state and said, hey, teachers, we just discovered all of these resources. We're ready to hire some energetic teaching assistants, two or three, in fact, for every one of you. And these teaching assistants will, first of all, they're going to be able to walk around your classroom and make sure your students are supported and tutor them in the moment when they need it. They're going to be able to report back to you on where you might want to modify your lessons or be able to do things more directed. They're going to take a first pass at grading your papers, but you're still going to be in charge. They're going to free you up from all of that administrative work so that you could do more focused interventions. And really the human element that really connects with students. I think, you know, we've all gone through the school system. I think we all remember the four or five times in most of our, you know, K-12 experience where a teacher sat down with us and saw us as not just one of 30, but just saw us as an individual and said, hey, Sal, I really like the way that you did that earlier today. I think you really have some potential in there. You might want to look into that. That sticks in your head. I still remember some of those moments from second or third grade. I think we can optimize those moments. And I think that's why every teacher goes into the profession. They're not going into the profession to spend 15 hours a week writing lesson plans or to grade, 50 papers on the Great Gatsby written by 13-year-olds. Now, they're still going to be doing that, but it's going to be a lot more efficient on both sides of that. They do imagine, hey, I want those in-person moments with the students. I want to make the classroom more engaging. I want to feel that I'm really supporting them. So I don't think there's any end to teacher work. I actually think this moves them up the value chain. And with that said, I think it also supports teachers who might be newer, who might be just ramping in, to just make sure that the floor is raised there, that their kids are getting a good experience.
Are you good? You good? Rep. Daniels, do you have a question? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're recognized. I thought you were pointing to her. You're recognized.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you so much. You saved the Pittman family and the Pittman household many nights full of tears because we used Khan Academy all the time. And our teachers recommended it in our school district, Hillsborough County, thought highly of Khan Academy. And I was kind of hesitant at first, but the quality of your teachers were amazing. Where did you find these teachers?
You recognize.
I made about 80% of the content personally, so I'm the ultimate micromanager. pretty much anything in math and probably 90% of the science is me, and then on the humanities we have a little bit more of a mix. But I'll take the compliment.
It was great.
You have a follow up, Rep. Pickman? Further questions? Any further questions? All right, I just have a couple. I really like the idea of directing students to what their possible resources might be from a counseling standpoint, what things they need to look at as far as education goes. The financial literacy, for instance, if you wanted to be a congressman, you probably wouldn't have to pay attention to paying down debt. But what I want to ask you regarding that, is some of this information going back to the developer so they can actually determine where they need to have improvement in some of the software?
Oh, yeah. We can monitor what's we are looking at. People can do thumbs up, thumbs down when it has a good or bad response. We are doing user studies pretty aggressively to make sure that it's serving teachers and students and parents' needs. Behind the scenes, we're able to understand what seems to be working, what doesn't seem to be working. You know, we have our own metrics of learning within our site, so we can even use that as a bit of a way to do internal study. So yeah, we are, this is one of the reasons why I set up Khan Academy as a not-for-profit many years ago. This was well before we thought generative AI was going to be a thing. It was obvious that data could be very powerful, but it could also be very dangerous, especially students' data. And data is very powerful. If it can be used to measure your efficacy, improve the experience, or personalize it more for learners or for teachers or parents. And so that's where we are super focused. Data is very bad if it gets, first of all, if it's not protected and secured and other people get a hold of it, or if it is used to try to sell things to kids or to market them, or you sell that data to someone else. And so one of our reasons for being a not-for-profit, among others, is that so we never even have the temptation to go there on the data side. So we do use the data to try to improve the systems and measure efficacy and personalize more, but we will never, and it's very clear in our terms of service, we will never sell the data or use it in any of these commercial ways.
Very good. Mr. Khan, I really want to thank you on behalf of the committee for your ability to present today, and more so for what you're doing for education for our children, both now and in the future. Members, our last presentation today is by Jason Hovey. He's Director of School Partnerships at the Khan Academy. And Renee Venegas, she's the Senior Southeast Regional Sales Manager for Khan Academy. Mr. Hover is a former elementary and middle classroom school teacher, K-8 technology coordinator. He has over 25 years experience in ed tech working with education companies and school districts, including 6 years working at the Khan Academy, including leadership partnerships in schools and school districts across the country. Ms. Venegas, who is happily here today in person, began her career teaching in rural California, we won't hold that against her, districts where she saw firsthand the challenges facing historically under-resourced populations. She brings about 25 years of classroom and ed tech experience working alongside the districts, states, and departments of education from across the country. Her work at Khan Academy has been focused on providing high-quality instructional materials and supports, which includes our tool that we're learning about today, Khan Mingo. Mr. Hovey and Ms. Venegas, thank you for taking the time to appear before our committee. And Mr. Hovey, you are currently recognized.
Thank you all. Let me just get my screen shared here. Apologies for the technical difficulties.
We see you.
Okay. And can you see the screen now?
No, not yet. Now we can. Coming up.
Okay. So thanks everyone for hosting us today. I just wanted to jump in real quick before we talk specifically about Conmigo. As Sal mentioned, Florida has traditionally had a ton of Khan Academy usage as our free offering. And so just to give you an idea of the content that's available for free, but also that we support through our district partnerships, which launched about 5-6 years ago, there's a breadth of content across all grade levels, right? So Sal talked about the power that the AI can bring. These are the courses that your districts are either using us for free or partnering with us to add additional layers of support. You'll notice in the math, we've actually built out specific content for Florida, right? So there's best aligned content for the math for grades 3 through algebra 2 that we've been working with y'all over the past year plus. And then a breadth of content across high school math, science. SAT has actually been a huge use case of free Khan Academy, but also our district partnerships across Florida. Y'all have a concordance score, which helps those kids at risk of graduating to be able to qualify for graduation. And so a lot of your schools and districts have leaned heavily on our SAT course. That course, as you know, is switched to a digital format. So we work with the College Board to support a new digital SAT course that your students, schools, and teachers have been using, which is great. So we're really proud of that. We have a teacher in Collier we've been working with for the past 4+ years. Every one of her kids has been able to qualify for a concordance score because she's been using our SAT or digital SAT course with those at-risk students to get them to qualify for graduation. So that's just something we're really pleased about. And then as Sal mentioned, we have things like financial literacy, computer science. But this should just give you an idea of the content that's being used both with sort of the free version of Khan, but also with our district partnerships and with Conmigo to support now. I did want to mention that this content and Conmigo are available in multiple languages, right? So the content you see here, all these courses are translatable in languages like Spanish, that includes the videos. And then Conmigo isn't available in languages like Spanish, Portuguese. We've been speaking with Miami-Dade. They've asked for Haitian Creole, which we should have available for back to school. So the power of Conmigo is not just in its value as a student tutor and teaching assistant, but also that it's available real time in multiple languages to help those ELL students, which is something we're getting positive feedback on. Now, in terms of how we rolled out Conmigo this year, which is currently ongoing, we have 40+ district partners around the country and growing, and we have about 60+ teachers, around 60,000 students and 4K teachers. This number is growing because we literally have districts approaching us on a daily basis wanting to get their hands on Conmigo. I think we did really good job of being very thoughtful about this. We saw the mistakes that some of the live tutoring programs did, you know, after COVID, where they just turned it on for everybody, right? And districts, states spent a boatload of money to activate those, but there wasn't a thoughtful plan for how that was going to be used. Not, as Sal mentioned, not a lot of people use those. So we didn't want to replicate that problem, right? We really wanted to learn as we go. And so we had these pilots we started with to roll this out thoughtfully, get very detailed feedback from district students, teachers across the country. And that's why these numbers are what I'd call relatively modest, but are quickly going to expand based on the positive feedback. And we could talk about what that's going to look like in Florida in a minute. I wanted to highlight a couple different ways these partnerships have been working. We had our first state level implementation of Conmigo through the Indiana DOE and the Secretary of State there. And so what they did is they were very interested in piloting Conmigo with districts across the state, sort of their more forwarding thinking districts and superintendents. So what they did with us is they developed a grant that they rolled out right around August that would allow districts to apply for funding to roll out an AI-based pilot to assist students, right? Student supports, across the state. So we had about 24 districts that applied for that grant and were approved. And the way it worked is that the district would basically be reimbursed for the cost of that partnership through the DOE. And so we had about 21 of those 24 approved districts ended up partnering with us. And we have about 25,000 students and 2K teachers through it. So it was a very efficient way to find funding for the pilot and for those districts to be able to test the AI system. And we're in the process of expanding that, which I'll talk about a little bit more. Ohio is interesting, and this is one of the things that the Conmigo has as a nonprofit, is frequently we have local donors that are looking to support our work, right? And so what Intel did is committed about $300,000 through their work with the Ohio DOE to fund districts to be able to use and pilot Conmigo this year, right? So I think that ended up being about five districts we're working with that Intel funding to help expand that work. Additionally, we have research studies underway. As you can imagine, everybody wants to know the efficacy that goes around this. We're in process of doing research studies with various districts across the country. And as soon as that information is available, we'll share it. But as Sal talked about, the initial data right now is pretty positive. We had a pilot we did last spring with Newark, New Jersey, and some high schools in Indiana. And sort of the initial feedback was tremendous. 70% of the teachers rated Conmigo helpful or very helpful. And again, these were early versions of Conmigo where we hadn't done a lot of product enhancement like we have today. And then what excited me was students described Conmigo as conversational. It makes them feel understood, kind, respected, all those things you'd want to see to make kids feel engaged in their learning, right? And that's half the battle. If we can get kids engaged in the learning, we know that's going to make the learning path a lot easier. Right. And most of those students rate Conmigo a 4 or 5 on a scale when they asked how much it felt like a good tutor. Right. And as Sal talked about, our partners we have this year that we're piloting, we're hearing tremendous feedback in the amount of time it's taking off the teacher's plate, saving them time to actually teach. And Milpitas Unified, our assistant superintendent there, he's taking this data and he's now using it as a recruiting and retention tool, right? We all know how overwhelmed teachers are, how hard it is to keep engaged and dedicated teachers. So he's basically saying, okay, here's the salary, but in addition to that, I can now at a minimum give you 5 hours of your teacher time back, right? Take some of that slack out of the system. In terms of the state level conversations, these are all going, just because I know we're talking to you on the state level here. Indiana, what's happening is we're currently talking about expanding that DOE grant program with the Secretary of Education, right? So bringing additional grant funding so that districts across the state of Indiana can be added next year and get access to Conmigo. We're also speaking with North Carolina. It's very similar to what we're maybe talking about you all today is how do they get Conmigo into the hands of all their teachers and students? And thinking through what an appropriations bill looks like. And so we're talking to the legislative committee there about how we might secure that funding. New Hampshire is a little bit different. We're working with the DOE and the commissioner there, right? And what they want to do is use the remaining ESSER funds. So they have a huge chunk of ESSER funds left, and they want to use it basically to support teachers and students ultimately for school year next year. So roll it out broadly for districts across New Hampshire using those remaining ESSER fundings. Idaho, very similar with you all, and maybe North Carolina. We're talking to the education committee there about legislative funding, but they're very interested in getting this in the hands of all teachers and students. And then Washington State's another interesting example. We're working with the Secretary of Education, who's working closely with the governor there to figure out what that funding source may be like. So as we know in education, every state does differently. So we're learning as we go here. But the idea here is we're trying to be thoughtful with the different states about how do we get this in the hands of students. I think it's important worth noting that Sal and I, when we're talking to the Secretary of Education of Washington, he brought up a very good point where his concern is a lot of his districts he felt were going to make rash decisions around this AI. There's a lot of products out there, and as Sal talked about, not a lot of them are using sort of the cutting edge AI. They don't have the safety guardrails in place. And so his concern is that his districts are going to start to choose between 10 or 15 competing products out there. And maybe 10 of those companies aren't going to be around in 18 months. So his focus is how do I identify a strong product like Conmigo, roll that out at scale so that districts aren't making individual decisions, and he could have more of a united approach and understand what each of those districts are using going forward. The last thing I want to talk about, I'm going to throw this to Renee, is our work in Florida. And so before Renee jumps in and talks about what we're doing at Conmigo, I think it's important to note we've been working in Florida for years now. OCPS was one of the first partners we've had when we rolled out our district partnerships. We're working with Palm Beach. We're working with Osceola. We're working with Collier. So there's multiple districts across Palm Beach that we've been working with on a district partnership basis for years. And maybe I'll throw it to Renee now to talk about what we're doing at Conmigo, both this year and going forward.
Very good. Members, before we have questions for Mr. Hovey, we'll have Ms. Venegas have her presentation about what's happening in Florida. And if you could also address, either one of you, what other types of products are out there and how wide is their application currently? Go ahead. In our state particularly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, it's great to be with you all today. So across Florida, the reason why we have such a focused, plan here is because out of all 50 states, Florida has the highest usage in our content. So whether it's free or in partnership. And so as we were looking across, you know, where do we want to focus? Where do we want to really dive in? Florida rose to the top. So two, as you can tell, we are in our initial phase with Conmigo for the year. And so we have a couple pilots that are rolling out. One is in Osceola County, where we've had a long-term partnership with our content and support services. And now we have a high school there, Liberty High School, who's using a federal turnaround grant in order to pay for it for their high school for this year. We are also launching our biggest partnership in the country in Palm Beach County. This semester, we are rolling out with 9 of their high schools, 21,000 students. We are now discussing rolling out to all of middle, high school, and adult education, so about 115,000 students and about 7,000 teachers there for all of 24-25. They have, fortunately, an outside funder who is coming alongside them and saying, we'll all put up half of it if you put up the other half. So as Sal spoke about, there are just hard computational costs that have to be paid for. And so districts are trying to get creative as that ESSER funding is coming to an end, and they recognize that they need to move towards AI. It's not going away, but trying to get creative in how this can happen for their students. To address your question about what other tools are out there, we know that there, Sal spoke about it, Jason spoke about it. This is kind of that arms race to get to everyone trying to put out that AI tool. So if anyone is speaking to you about having an efficacy study or we know XYZ what it's doing for students, everybody is in the early phases. However, what we are backed by is research. So our research team is looking at how efficacious is this? And as we learn what is working and not working for students, that's what informs our decisions. So I can't unfortunately say, XYZ companies are also being used at such a rate, given that it's everybody's kind of new to this field with education.
Questions, members? Any questions for either presenter? Rep. Bankson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the presentation. This is tremendous. What's the accessibility to all the school choice options? Is this just available in program form to public? Is it for charter, private, so on and so forth?
Either one of you can answer.
Yeah, thanks. So Conmigo is available for everyone. There's a couple of different ways that you can access it. The first one is by going directly to our website where parents can purchase for themselves and for their students. Teachers or adults can also purchase, but we cannot have teachers purchasing for other students unless they're in partnership with us because of those guardrails, and we want to make sure all of the student data privacy pieces are in place. So you can do it privately through our website. We can also go into partnership, and Rep. Tuck was asking about, what does implementation models look like? That's where we really step in to support teachers and students, right? Teachers have, I think the latest study was over 100 EdTech tools at their fingertips. I don't have time for 100 EdTech tools in a day and to be able to use them well. So we want to make sure that districts are coming to us and saying, work with us, help us, support us in implementation, professional development, et cetera. That's where we're going to see the deepest, inroads with students and teachers. So you could do it either side, either way. But we hope districts come to partnership just so we can support them throughout the year.
Further questions? Rep. Whitson, you have a question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's going to be quick. I know we have session. I noticed that you are partnering with Palm Beach. Have you had a conversation with Broward County? Because I have one of my school board members here from Broward County. Have you had a conversation with them?
Not in particular about Conmigo. We've had conversations in the past about partnering to support SAT and concordance scores. But I would be happy to have a conversation with Broward County.
Rep. Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you all to the presenters. My question to you is, we hear that there is a computation cost, although this is not the Appropriations Committee. I'm curious what that computation cost would be and what would, a value of a contract would look like for a district.
Can you specify, Rep. per person or per a group of people? Because I'm sure it's going to vary based on the size.
Thank you for that clarification. And if you can discuss about both, what would that look like? Thank you.
You're recognized.
Yep. So right now, computation costs are a little bit high, but they have come down dramatically even in the last year. So I equate it to when my family first bought that first flat screen TV and it was thousands of dollars, and now you can go to Walmart and buy one for $300, you know, and it's probably better than that first one. That's really where we're headed, right? So this current school year, it was around $60 a student and teacher. For this next school year, it's going to be between $25 and $35, depending on the volume of licenses purchased. So you can already see in 1 year, it's pretty much come down half. Given our mission of free world-class education, we're trying to drive those costs down as cheap as we can.
You have a follow-up? Yeah, it's great to see the technology usually lowers prices and everything except drug costs. Chair Mello, you have a question? You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. With regard to Rep. Tuck's question about implementation within the schools, so I understand, and thank you for the answer, I understand there's a cost for the subscription. What would the cost associated be to going into, say, Collier County Public Schools, which is my county, and helping with that implementation process with the teachers?
So our implementation costs are included in the student license price. So depending on the size of the implementation determines how we do it by hours, but it depends on the depth of which we're going to implement. But that's really off of a ratio of we understand how many students, how many teachers, and then in general we over budget to make sure that there's, you know, whatever support is needed for those teachers and students. But that's all rolled into that cost of the license.
Let me piggyback on that question. Let's say there's a state in this country with over 3 million students. Yourself or another firm, do you have the capability now to use that tool in every school district, private, public charter, homeschool that takes vouchers?
So for 3 million students in Florida, we would be able to ramp quickly. There is a breadth and depth of people here that would love to come work for us and support across the state, but we would be able to support. We also, there's a couple of things that we do. One is the coalition of the willing, right? As Jason was talking about, we want to make sure that those that are opting in because they want that support and they want to drive that and, you know, for depth, right? We don't want to just say everybody has it and then nobody takes advantage of it and then we don't drive student learning. So the first thing that we love that term, coalition of the willing. And so whenever there's like the state DOE grant in Indiana is a great example, it was offered to every state, but or every district, excuse me, but 24 districts opted in, which is a healthy portion of that state. And now more will be able to as they see that capability for their teachers and students, because we don't want to add one more thing to overwhelm and say, now you're doing one more thing. That's the opposite of what we're trying to do.
Chair Mello, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. So thinking along the lines of cost, once you kind of create that model for implementation with a school, I hate to use the word rubber stamp, but you're going into a lot of other public schools, I would think that would be very similar in the implementation process. Would you look at the cost then going down if we were to have multiple schools that would be taking on the same implementation process?
Yes, so we do operate on a volume, and so and you said Collier County, correct?
Well, I'm just looking
so
at like the state
for your,
as
for instance,
whole.
The larger the implementation model, right? We are able to bring costs down for the student license price while not bumping into, you know, we're not going to lower the level of service that we do for implementation and support.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Rep. Bankston, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Expansion, is there any focus on moving out of the just the core issues or the core educational models into trades and elective courses, things like that as we go along?
You're recognized. That's a good question.
Yeah. So I think Sal touched on it a little bit, is that we are really looking at having Conmigo be that sort of co-pilot, if you will. I know Microsoft has that term, but being that co-pilot for what students are doing across the web. So it isn't just in our, you know, in our content and our courses. But we think it's important that they have that co-pilot so that regardless of where they are, it still has that safety and that guardrail piece. So if, you know, somebody is wanting to use it in their trades course, they'll be able to have that as the extension as well. So that is something that our team is iterating on right now.
Very good. Any further questions, members? Well, I want to thank all the presenters for their time. This certainly is a technology, members, that's in its infancy. And like any infant, there's a lot of bottle feeding and rear-end wiping that's involved. But as it matures, it will be even more functional and productive. And I'll use the analogy of the helicopter. It was originally envisioned by Leonardo da Vinci over 500 years ago in Italy, and I'll emphasize Italy. But it wasn't until 1907 when Paul Curnow developed the first functional helicopter. And then in the 30s, Igor Sikorsky, who was a Russian-American, became the father of helicopters. Mr. Ramsey had a slide where it showed the development of AI, and I would say most of our technology is on an exponential scale. And when you look at that exponential scale, the rate of change is ever increasing until you get totally vertical. We're experiencing that today. And as policymakers, as servants of our state, it's incumbent on us to address these very difficult, highly technical subjects and make sure that our students and our constituents, being teachers in the districts, have the best resources they can so we can continue to deliver leading education for our country. So again, I want to thank you all. Ranking Member Williams, you have someone that you'd like to have address the committee on the subject. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Former Navy personnel, a successful business owner, I would like to introduce my friend, Dr. Zeman.
Thank you. Would you like to say a few words? I think she wanted you to address the committee.
Those 95 million new jobs are not anything like the trade, manufacturing, and lawyering, and engineering jobs we've had in the past. And therefore, the skills that we need to create the workforce to take those 95 million jobs is not well known. I appreciate Representative Williams asking me to talk about that. But it's, to me, a government function to help set the standard for education in the state. And I think it's something maybe counties need to work with you all to figure out better.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate the support you've given us for our committee today. We appreciate you coming. And lastly, Rep. Woodson, I believe you have a recognition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I was about to introduce Dr. Zeman. I was going to say one of the most committed board members, school board members in Broward County, but he's already been introduced by Rep. Williams, so I just wanted to recognize him for being here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I think that's the second time you recognized him. You must be very popular down there, sir. Rep. Valdez, you have a recognition as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad that you opened it up that way because I have a fellow school board member here also in the committee. And I wanted to welcome Member Patty Rendon from Hillsborough County Public Schools, school board member to the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're very welcome. And Rep. I'm sorry, Vice Chair Bell, you have a recognition as well?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to recognize Jim Scow and his granddaughter, Kylie, that's here from Fort Meade. Jim is a city commissioner from my hometown, Fort Meade, so welcome to the Capitol.
Very good. Well, thank you. Seeing members, I really appreciate your time today, and seeing there's no further business before us, Chair Rizzo, being back from the Arctic cold, move we rise, and we are adjourned.